Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm delighted to welcome a young entrepreneur who's got many, many more talents, Shumita Basu. Shumita, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Shumita is the founder and CEO of Zenica. With a background in social development. She's a development practitioner, writer, and copy editor. She's a journalist specializing in public policy, action research, program evaluations, and development communications. So Shumita, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your career or your life?
I think, when we talk about milestones, we really say turning points. Or people look at progresses, but I would probably say, things that made me sit up and think a little bit. So one is a very personal one, because you also said life, I'm taking that route.
Yeah.
Is when my sister was born. Okay. And she was born when I was quite young. I was 4 and a half. Mm-hmm. But I still remember that so vividly after all these decades. And I think having her in my life really changed a lot of things, the way I interact with people, the way I think of sharing things. So I think sharing comes more easily for me because, she's around.
Wonderful.
Another thing for sure is when, so it's not a one moment, but when I have been working with the villages in India, mm-hmm. and it gave me a very stark reality check, mm-hmm. of, how I have been living and how privileged that life is. Mm-hmm. But one thing particularly, there was this one moment where I was just traveling in a bus. It was not a work thing. It was, I just wanted to check out the place around. And I had gone very close to the Bangladesh border. And there was this lady on the bus. She was very worried about me. I mean, I was very visibly not local. Mm-hmm. And then she said, "You want to come over, have lunch, and just be careful. Just don't go here and there. You might be caught." I really appreciated that. And I went to her house and I realized that they really were sharing with me what they don't even have. And that again for me was a huge thing. It changed the way I was like, okay, if these people are willing to share what they don't have, why can I not share what I already have? Mm-hmm. And the final part of the milestone is, of course, when I started my own company. I started it not more so much in the perspective of having a business. It started more because I wanted to solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it was solution oriented. And after that, the response I started getting from people, mm-hmm. it made me feel that, yes, this is something that needs to be done. And it's not just about the clothes, which is what I'm doing,
right.
but it's a larger, larger thing which mm-hmm. needs to be addressed. So I think these three things.
Wonderful. I love your example about your sister and this lady in Bangladesh, or on the Bangladesh border. I mean,
border.
I think it's very typical of a lot of rural India, where they just open up their hearts and their homes for any visitors. So it's amazing. So Shumita, let's now talk about Zenica Inclusive Fashion. Before you tell me about this venture, tell me, what does Zenica mean?
Zenica is actually a Sanskrit word, and I just didn't know the best way to spell it. Mm-hmm. So Shanika, Zenika, that's where it is. It's a name of a female hawk. So female hawk in Sanskrit is called, and the characteristics of that hawk is elegance and perseverance.
Okay. With a sharp beak or not a sharp beak?
It has a sharp beak.
Okay. So now tell me about this venture.
So, it started because of my personal struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Around when I was late 20s, early 30s, I started losing my mobility, and it was a regressive disorder. So I started from 5 to 10, and then at one point I was at 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of have experienced the entire spectrum, and I realized that very early on, I just couldn't wear clothes which are, I could do it on my own, and which could be done in a more or less painless way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wanted that, right? You don't want to experience pain every single day of your life. It's just like, Yeah, and I mean, I thought that was unbelievable to do that. So when I started looking out in the market, I couldn't find anything like that. Mm-hmm. And the less I found things like that, the more I was just captivated by the idea that there's something which is, you know, made by human beings. Mm-hmm. It's not natural. And yet it doesn't really address so many different problems. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, first I just solved my own problem. And the moment I did that, by that time I had, you know, a growing community that I was interacting with, and they said, "Oh, we have similar problems, etc." So I was like, "Okay, now obviously I have to share the solution with other people. How do I share that?" And Zenica was my, you know, response to the how question. This is how I wanted to share it.
Okay, so you know, tell me about you know, what you did to overcome the challenge, and what is adaptive clothing?
So adaptive clothing is designed in a way which takes care of all kinds of body types, all kinds of physical challenges, to ensure that you're comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's easy to wear. It's good to look at. So, you know, it's not like you are how do I say this? I don't want to use the word, but I will. It's like you're not in hospital clothes.
Okay.
You're not looking sick all the time. You're not feeling that, you feel like yourself.
Right.
And more importantly, I think it gives you a wider space of independent dressing. Mm-hmm. Because very early on in the disability, so even when you're able to do other things, so in my case, like I was able to chop vegetables, cook, and you know, stuff like that, but I was not able to wear my own clothes. Mm-hmm. So a private space was getting invaded in. Mm-hmm. And very, I think in my case, at around 15-20%, I couldn't do it. And now with my clothes, I can do it even at 80%. Mm-hmm. So that's the spectrum that we are talking about. Sure. And again, one has to be mindful that anything accessible, anything inclusive, always more or less means that there is no one size fit all, no one solution for everyone. Okay. So that's the thing. It's not like we are thinking of any one type of clothing which will be for everyone. We are thinking of a range of clothing, and there will be various clothes and various garments that will address to different people.
Wow. So tell me, you know, why has this not been addressed for so many years? I mean, what is it? Because the big designers and the big garment companies didn't think this was a market? Yeah. Or it was just not relevant?
So I cannot speak on their behalf, I can just do some guesswork. And my guess is that this sector itself, you know, is seen as a sector that is not a viable market.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that cannot be further away from the truth. That's my own understanding. And moreover, the way we talk about disability, that is when we think about, you know, markets and viability or not. But I'm saying, why just talk disability? Everybody needs inclusive fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So when I did not have any disability, mm-hmm. I was always worried about, you know, am I going to wear this? Am I looking too fat? Is it okay? Because most of our clothes are really built in this, you know, for somebody in the hourglass shape, right?
Right.
And most of the women are, I guess men too, but I really know more about women who are constantly struggling with that.
Mm-hmm.
So it has taken, I mean, you know, Ashutosh, when you're talking about why it's taken so long for people to think about disability or, you know, adaptive clothes, I would say it has taken decades for them to even talk about plus size clothing. And if that has taken that long, I mean, so visible and so obvious. So I think the answer lies there.
I understand. So tell me then, you know, for people who are, you know, their own challenges or differently abled, what are some of the challenges that we need to address as a society to be able to, you know, support? I mean, after all, we are all the similar human beings and as citizens of this country.
Yes. So as I always say, we talk about integration and inclusion. So inclusion is one thing, integration is even more important. But whenever we talk about it, we always say that, you know, we are trying to do this to empower a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great, and I agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel that we stop there when the fact is that this group of people has a lot of talent.
Correct.
And when you integrate, you being the larger society will also really benefit from it. And we tend to forget that. Mm-hmm. And the moment we forget that, we tend to become a little patronizing. You know, we are doing something for someone else. You know, that comes in. But I think we need to break that. We need to break that and say, hey, we want to become a better society. It's not about empowering someone else. It's about empowering us as a society. Mm-hmm. And how do we do that? Okay, we need to do A, B, C, D things. I think that mindset, Ashutosh, if that changes, we will go a long way. And one of the best ways to do it is to just stop and say, okay, I'm going to do this. Am I thinking of everybody? And then think, okay, what is my definition of this everybody? Because we need to do that. We are not, we have not been schooled in a way where we are being taught about everybody.
Very well said. So, you know, I've spoken to many, many people on my show who had their own set of challenges. And I've often asked them that, you know, there are two sets of people who have to play a role. One is the government, who has to legislate and who has to provide infrastructure. And the other one is the community that we live in. Because that inclusion, I think, is far more important than just an infrastructure that the government needs to provide. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with you. I think there are lots and lots of things that the community can do without the government, you know, coming in. And that is true. That is where it actually, you know, falls in place. Right now, for example, there is the RPWD Act, which is basically the Persons with Disabilities Act of 2016. Further, in 2017, it was upgraded. We are part of the UN Convention. India is a signatory. So all the policies are in place, you know, so nobody's, I mean, first and foremost, if you do something right, the government is not going to put you in jail, hopefully. Mm. And second of all, even when they have the policies in place, even when they not only have the policies, but how to go about it, like the step-by-step orders, it's not getting done. So I think the government is probably the tiniest part of it. Okay. And of course, but still very powerful. Because, yes, you have the policy, but can you push forward for the implementation? We already in India, that has been one of the biggest challenges between having a policy and implementing it. So if they push forward for the implementation, but there's no way of implementing mindsets, you know. So people doing it grudgingly wouldn't help. But if you do it grudgingly for two generations, it becomes a part of your being.
Absolutely.
So it's both ways. Mm-hmm.
And what about inclusion at the workplace? I mean, you're an entrepreneur, so you're creating your own rules in your company. But I also know that there are a lot of challenges in the workplace where people seek employment. What is your experience?
So not too long back, I have been one of those who have been seeking employment. Okay. So I do know the challenges. And see, what happens is we, just last week, I had written a blog on FemLabs. They talk about feminist labor, and I said, you know, this is what we need to talk about, feminist labor. So we always think about productivity in this, you know, one hour, how much are you coming up with, or in 5 days, what are you doing? And anyway, the moment you do a little different, like if you're a design thinker, you cannot think of, you know, I have thought about 5 designs in 2 hours. It doesn't work like that. But it is also similar for inclusive workspaces. First and foremost, you have to understand that you are not just looking at a person's talent, but also particular skills. Mm-hmm. So for example, in my case, I have a lot of people with autism, and I'm constantly seeking out for them. Like, you know, if you are interested in painting and if you have autism, I would like you to do some stuff for my clothing, because it's even better than printing, because they're so precise at their work. So focusing, I mean, every disability gives you some kind of, you know, an extra edge to probably do something. I'm not trying to romanticize disability at all. And at the same time, I always tell my colleagues, even though those where I had, you know, previously sought employment, please don't call me differently abled, and please don't call me specially abled, because the moment you start using the word disability, you are almost forced to, you know, face that, okay, there's something that's not there. Mm-hmm. And then what do we do? When you say differently abled, when you say specially abled, the onus is on me to somehow find a way out. When we say disability, the onus is on everybody together to find, you know, the space where you have me around.
Oh, well said. Very nice. I'm going to remember that, and I'm not going to use this at all in future. Thank you. That's an amazing learning for me today. So, Shubhita, let's talk for a few minutes on your other passions, which are, you know, writing, copy editor, development practitioner. Tell me about the work you're doing in this area.
So, you know, I started as a journalist and I very, very quickly moved on to becoming a social researcher, particularly focusing on action research. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the stuff, and that would, you know, bring me back into program designing. How do you design programs that would probably have, you know, a few positive outcomes for the communities that we're working in?
Right.
And at that time, my writing was, you know, there's just so much work that you never could focus on the kind of writing that you might want to do. When I started falling sick and my disability started, you know, regressing, that's when I found the challenge of being employed. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think that is when, you know, the writer kind of popped up again, because what can you do from home? And I couldn't use a laptop, so I had to really use my phone. And I kind of reinvented how to use the phone for myself. Okay. I'm pretty sure other people have done it for themselves too. That's when I became the copy editor. So I had a very strong academic background, and that was a way for me to find employment. But once I started settling in and, you know, finding more places, really creating more awareness that, you know, we need to do this kind of work. Mm-hmm. Now I have some time to do the kind of writing that I really enjoy, mm-hmm. which is I write a lot about, you know, things around me. Mm-hmm. So really a blog kind of stuff, not necessarily my own blog, but for different spaces and platforms. And I write writing things which just to break the thought process. So I've been working on a fairy tale project. Mm-hmm. Going to be published pretty soon. We are done with it. It's the final stage of the cover, mm-hmm. where we took some of the fairy tales. This I did with this organization called Rising Flame. They are a feminist disability movement organization. What we did was we took some of the popular ones and we gave it a twist. Yeah, we made it feminist. We added disability characters that have disabilities. So all of that. So I like writing on those things now, just to introduce our kids to something different.
I agree. And the kids market is very, very large. I mean, the kids want Indian content. Yeah. You know, when I was growing up, all that we had was Enid Blyton and all the Disney cartoons.
Yes.
You know, but now I see so much more, and what you're doing is fantastic.
Thank you.
So one other thing that I was reading, that you also develop communication strategies for organizations. So tell me, what goes into developing an effective strategy?
You know, honestly, the thumb rule is honesty. Mm-hmm. You have to be sure that you want to be honest with the people that you're communicating with. So to do that, you effectively also need to know who your people are. And what is it that you want to communicate? What is it that, who are you? So there's a lot of self-reflection that goes on. Right. So every time we do a communication strategy, usually the entire organization sometimes is sitting for hours and trying to figure out, who are we, what do we do? And then the next question is, what do we really do, you know? So when we do that, that comes in. And then of course, given the people that you're reaching out to, that dictates what kind of medium that you're choosing to communicate to them with. Okay. So there's lots of stuff. Sometimes there's no words at all. It's just a lot of visuals, mm-hmm. sometimes only audio. And nowadays, you know, honestly speaking, Ashutosh, I myself have become far more sensitive and aware of accessibility needs. So earlier, before my own disability, when I had design communications, I don't think I was aware of that. And I don't think I had put that thought into my paper so much. But nowadays it's like, okay, if you're thinking of, let's say, audio visual, does a person who is deaf, and then how does a person who is blind, how the both can also, you know, be communicated with on the same way? If not the same way, then can we have a separate strategy for them and could, you know, integrate that? So all these thoughts really come in together.
Very fascinating. So now I'm going to move to the last segment of our conversation, which are some questions for you personally.
Okay.
My first question is that, you know, you've been a journalist, you've got your own organization, Zanika, Inclusive Fashion. What are some of the core values you believe in?
I believe in sincerity. Mm-hmm. And I think that is very often missing in a lot of things. We can be passionate, and passion does take us places, but passion doesn't keep us stable. You know, it's the sincerity that keeps us there, keeps us moving, keeps us being perseverant. And without perseverance, there's nothing that really can be. Mm. So a lot of people talk about impact. And, you know, as a startup, I get to hear that often, that what's your impact? I said, you know, I'm just starting. Like, you know, can we hold on to see the impact? And, but I think the biggest impact at any point is the fact that no matter what the numbers are, no matter what it is, continuously being there and doing what you're believing in and doing it at this, with the same level or maybe even higher level and increasing level of sincerity every day. I think that's the core, most important thing. And if one day, so again, the next thing is honesty, because if one day you think this is not what I want to do, have the honesty to step back and do something else or at least step back from that.
Interesting. And tell me, who or what inspires you?
Right now, you know, just a few days, probably 2 weeks back, I had somebody who, there was an article on me and she read my name, then she found me up on LinkedIn and then she connected and then she found my number and she called me. And the first thing she said was, I was looking for you for 20 years.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. I mean, I was too surprised to know how to react to this. And then she said, you know, my daughter has, you know, I don't know what the type of disability is, but it's a locomotor problem. And we need the kind of work that you're doing. And for 20 years, I was hoping somebody would be doing this. Now that I've found you, and then she said, let's do it together. I'm with you, you know. And there have been other people who have said the same thing. There's a client who the other day just sent me a gift of, you know, a light, like a light frame. And he said, I know you are currently really small and you're doing it all yourself. I want to be a part of it. And this is, you know, just for you to take better pictures of your clothes. Mm-hmm. This where people are feeling involved, you know. I don't think, I mean, there are days, Ashutosh, I think since you've been interviewing and talking to entrepreneurs, you would know they feel like, oh my God, am I even doing anything? And I want to just give up. And I have those days too. And when this happens, I'm like, okay, it's worth every bit of the pain that I take. And generally for social enterprise, it's something that you say, oh, you're doing something for the society. And I hope I'm doing that. But I think in my case, it's also the other way around. It's the society that's building my enterprise. And I don't think there can be anything more motivating.
Wonderful. So my next question to you is that, you know, you're still very young and you've got so much to look forward to. But from where you are today, what does success mean to you?
If I go to sleep at the end of the night and I'm happy, that's what it is.
Wonderful. So time for two more questions for you. My next question is that if you, Shamita, were a role model to millions of children who closely followed you and your life choices,
oops,
what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
Okay, so there are times when I did not have a very balanced life. Mm-hmm. And I still struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I think that's the one thing I would definitely change. If at least kids are watching me, yes. Mm-hmm. You know, eat on time, sleep on time, please, you know.
Okay, I can see this is coming from, you know, all the work that you're doing on your new characters, in your blogs and your stories. Wonderful.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And also one, I mean, probably it's an extension of the balance. It's work is great and work, we should find ourselves there, but that's not the only place. So don't make work worship. Work is important, but it's a part of life. People are as important. Have some time for your family, have some time for your friends, and have some time for yourself. There's nothing more important than that.
Fantastic. And my last question to you, and this is on a question on failure.
Okay.
You know, I've often said this for many years that parents in India don't teach children it's okay to fail.
Yes.
You're always told first in class, head of the line, et cetera, et cetera. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns. So, you know, tell me, what has been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
So I have been very lucky because my father is actually the other way around. He said, great if you're first or not, but the fact is, see if you have learned anything in the process. And even if you failed, have you learned anything in the process? Second, he would always say, are you happy doing what you're doing? If not, rethink. Okay. And some of my biggest failures, lessons from my failures have been that you can't change everything. And it's okay to have an ambition, but it's not okay to, you know, be too hard on yourself. But be careful that you're changing at least the little things, and, you know, be good to yourself for that. So there are the smaller micro things that we tend to overlook. And similarly, when we not only are we overlooking the successes, but we also tend to overlook the failures. What happens is when you're having a larger success, we tend to overlook the smaller, tiny bits that have failed, and they tend to accumulate later, and that becomes a massive failure.
Right. Very well said. Shubhita, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. I've learned some amazing things, but my biggest takeaway and learning is no more use of special, words or anything to do with any special needs.
So I'm so glad. You're really kind to have listened to me on that. I'm really happy.
Wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.